From Washington, the nation's capital, the Voice of America presents Issues in the News. The nation's top Washington correspondents offer their perspectives on the week's major stories. Your moderator is Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Issues in the News begins now.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me on the show this week are Barbara Slavin, Senior Fellow at the Atlantic Council and Washington Correspondent for Al Monitor, and for the first time on the show, Christophe Voigt, French Editor-in-Chief for North America at Agence France-Presse and former AFP's Chief Editor in France. Here are the issues. After the massive Solidarity March in Paris, Europe remained in turmoil over how to deal with Islamic jihadism and immigration. In Belgium, police killed two returnees from fighting in Syria and disrupted an alleged terrorist plot. Meanwhile, the terrorist killings at a satirical magazine and a Jewish grocery in Paris have accelerated migration of French Jews to Israel. In Washington, President Obama continued to face criticism for failing to attend the Solidarity March. And on domestic issues, the president told Democrats he intends to be on offense against Republicans who now control Congress. Well, Christophe, let me start with you. We had the terrorist attacks. We've had the Great March. What now in Europe? I mean, that seems to be the question. Where do they go from here? The problem still exists of terrorism. There's an associated problem, immigration, but we'll get to that later.
Well, I think that the problem is not going to go away anytime soon. The head of Europol actually estimates that there are around 3,000 to 5,000 jihadists have come from Europe that are fighting right now in Syria and Iraq. At some point, they probably will want to come back. And then the question is, what do they want to do once they're home? Some of them just want to go back to normal life. They consider themselves as freedom fighters in Syria or Iraq, so they come back, and that's it. Maybe they'll just tell stories to their grandchildren. Others, obviously, are much more violent, and that was the case in Belgium. Two jihadists that had been killed by the police were actually coming back from Syria. That was not the case with the French attackers, but one of them was trained in Yemen by Al-Qaeda. So, yes, it's just a very difficult problem to deal with in the sense that I don't think that European intelligence agencies are equipped to follow all those people and to put them under surveillance. I'm not sure it would be a good idea anyway in terms of, you know, liberty and rights and things like that. But just the sheer number makes it impossible to track them.
Let me ask you one more question, and I haven't forgotten you, Barbara. And that is the French idea of freedom of speech. The attack a week and a half ago was an attack on the French satirical magazine that had made fun of Mohammed and still does. And yet, more recently, in the last few days, there seems to be a debate in Europe about the tension between jihad attacks and sensitivities of religious minorities and so on. And some of us in the U.S. don't quite understand exactly what the French position is.
Well, it's because the French position is complicated or subtle. It depends how you want to take it. Let's put it that way. Here, things are simple. You have the First Amendment, and it gives you an absolute right and freedom of speech. That doesn't exist probably anywhere in Europe. We have basic freedom of speech and freedom of the press, but there are things that you cannot say by law. For example, you cannot negate the Holocaust. You cannot say the Holocaust didn't exist. That's against the law in France, in most of the countries, Germany too, obviously. You cannot walk in the streets with a Nazi uniform. That's forbidden. Also, you cannot say, wow, terrorism is great, or those jihadists did a great job. There have been several people arrested in France for just doing that. They didn't do anything else. One of them published a stupid picture on Instagram, I think, with a gun and saying, oh, wow, that was great, you know, to kill all those Charlie people. Got arrested, is in jail now, is going to be tried, and we'll see. So this is a very, there's things you can, here you can say everything. In Europe, there are limitations to what you can say. You cannot incite to, you know, if you try to incite racism or hatred, hate speech is also forbidden. That's a big, big difference. Very often difficult for Americans to understand that we have freedom of speech, but there are limitations.
Yeah, I think what confuses me is that Charlie Hebdo, you know, prints cartoons which are incredibly offensive. So what's the difference between that and hate speech? If you're showing cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad in, how shall I put it, in delicate situations, how is that not hate speech?
That's a good question.
Well, it's kind of difficult to answer. It's a question of, I think there's a whole history behind it. The way, you know, here people, for example, saw that a lot of the covers that Charlie Hebdo was doing or publishing
were
racist, or they're certainly insensitive.
Yes.
But that's the whole point. By being so brutal, by kind of steering things up, they try to get things to change. That's their basic message. There is no racism there. Charlie Hebdo, for example. It's just another way to steer things up, to provoke the discussion, the debate. So they're disrespectful. They're just plainly disrespectful of any authority, religious or otherwise.
Yeah. I think part of it also is the kind of militant secularism you have in France, where
yes.
in the U.S. we have the separation of church and state. But if someone wants to wear a headscarf in school, perfectly all right. In France, you can't wear a headscarf in public school. You can't wear a religious insignia.
No, you can, well, you're not supposed to wear religious insignias in school, and that's where it gets complicated, because for a long time, if you were wearing a cross or Star of David, it was okay, nobody would say anything, and then suddenly, you know, we had the headscarves or other exterior signs of Muslim religion, and then it wasn't okay anymore. So there has been, and there is, a double standard, I think, for historical reason, for it's just a question of history. It's, you know, like Jews have been in France forever. That doesn't mean that they're always well treated. We might come back to that, but obviously it's a Christian country. So we're dealing now with a new religion for France, in the sense, I mean,
Not so new.
Muslims have been living in France for a long time, but from a historical point of view, it's quite new. There is a need to kind of get used to it, I guess. And and the reaction, yes, for, as you said, like hijabs, where, you know, a woman cannot be completely covered.
She can't wear the niqab.
No.
Where you,
all
you see are the eyes.
Cannot be covered. That's forbidden by law. There's a big debate about that. Should we do that or not? Should we be freer? Just let people... Because one of the things is that if you push, for example, Muslim girls out of school because their parents don't want them in a secular school because they cannot wear the hijab, where do they go?
Mm-hmm.
What happens to that? And that's a big question. We don't really have an answer to that. Are they going to go to Quranic school where they might be radicalized or not? But it's just suddenly they're out of the Republic. It's very, public education is very important in France. It's the basis of the French Republic, goes through education, through the schools. If part of the population cannot go there anymore because some of their religious signs cannot be shown, then it's getting complicated.
Well, that is quite different here. As you pointed out, Barbara, what do you make of? We're an ocean away here in the United States from Europe, and the French government has, I guess, officially declared war on Islamic jihadism. I'm not sure how that differs from what the policy was earlier, but what do you make of all of this in Europe?
Yeah. Well, first, I wanted to take issue with something you said in your
introduction.
What did I say? You kind of conflate this immigration with this issue. And in fact, the people
almost
who did...
The press does.
But the people who did these terrible attacks at Charlie Hebdo and so on were born in France.
I understand that.
And many, many, many of these jihadis, would-be terrorists, so on, are born in France. We're now many generations into these people being French citizens or Belgian citizens or Spanish citizens. So even if you cut off all immigration, you would not affect this this issue.
I understand that, but it has sparked a...
People who are opposed to
immigration in Europe.
I mean,
that was my point.
People always find a pretext to try to block people. I mean, the same is true.
Well, this was a pretty big pretext.
Yeah, same is true in this country. You know, people will always find a pretext to block immigration. I think what's interesting to me is the patterns and the individuals involved. There's been a lot of commentary suggesting that it's not even clear, even though Al-Qaeda in Yemen, after the fact, claim credit, responsibility for these horrible attacks, I don't like to say credit, that in fact they were lone individuals, perhaps, I don't want to call them lone wolves, maybe lone wolf packs. So groups of individuals who had been radicalized in various ways, who had experience in Yemen or experience in Syria, who had allegiance to Al-Qaeda in Yemen or to the Islamic State, who were friends of each other, who met in the 19th arrondissement in Paris, or who met in prison, all followed a certain imam. So you have these kind of informal networks of radicalized Muslims and Muslim converts. And That's true in Europe. It's also true to some extent in the United States. If you look at the sorts of attacks that we have faced, the Boston Marathon bombers, the Chernaev brothers, if you look at the attacks that were blunted, like the attempt to set off bombs in Times Square or to attack the New York City subways, you don't have these grand conspiracies directed by Al-Qaeda Central or even by the Islamic State. What you have are these informal networks, pockets of people. And that's another reason why it makes it so difficult to anticipate and prevent many of these attacks. In the United States, we've been very fortunate. We've blocked a number of these plots. The Belgians apparently have been able to pick up on some plots and block them.
And just in time,
apparently.
But some of the attack was going to happen today.
The one in Belgium?
If the police hadn't stopped them, they were going to attack police headquarters.
Well, yeah.
Well, one of the things in the United States, my understanding is, correct me if you think I'm wrong on this too.
But that is
American intelligence, the CIA, has been very reliant on French intelligence. Well, they certainly deal with them very closely and have over the years, even when there have been disputes between the American government at the top and the French government at the top.
We use a lot of surveillance, a lot of computer surveillance, and this is another controversy. Will the Europeans now, they've complained that the CIA has and the NSA have violated privacy of even Angela Merkel, listening into her cell phone and monitoring communications all over the place, in an attempt to catch some of these people. Will the Europeans now adopt more intrusive means of surveillance and follow the American lead in an effort to intercept potential plots?
I think they are quite intrusive already. What the Europeans were criticizing is more the fact that, oh my God, you're spying on me. the good guy, you're spying on the good guy, which, it's basically what you spy on everybody. That's your job. That's what you should do. So I think the whole outrage in Europe was a little bit fake because clearly intelligence agencies in Europe do the same things, or at least try. It's, again, a question of how much of means and of money. Mm-hmm. And, our intelligence agencies are just much smaller and they need to hire people. If you want to surveillance for one person on a 24-hour basis over a long period of time, it takes 20 people.
Mm. Wow. Let me ask you this. So, how should we in the United States understand what the French government means when it says we are declaring war on Islamic jihadism? Is this new? Are they going to do more? It sounds like they're still not going to be able to surveil, 1,000 people or more, which obviously would be very difficult and expensive. What should we expect?
Well, there is a few things that happened since François Hollande was elected. People here forget very easily that France is fighting a war against jihadists in Mali. Mm-hmm. We're also fighting Syria now, discreetly in Syria, and bombing Iraq. So this fight has been ongoing. I just think here it's very hard to realize that what France does, and they're very serious about it. It's difficult because, again, French army is a small army. So it really stretches what we do inside of France and to fight against the guys who come back. I think the specialists were very aware that this was a danger. And before I came back to the U.S., I had a discussion with the head of French intelligence, and the man knew what was going on. He knew what the danger was. He knew that the attacks, at some point, that there were going to be attacks. It's just, as you said, there is just no real way to stop them all. You cannot do that because, first of all, you cannot watch everybody all the time. And second, it's discreet. They can make the decision. It's not as easy as here, but it's easy enough now to buy a Kalashnikov, ammunition. And then who is going to stop you? Anybody could do that, even in France. So I'm afraid that, the French government is extremely serious about the fight against that. But it's a very complicated problem. It's not just arresting the jihadis. It's also about there is a lot of discontent in the French suburbs. That has been the case for a long time. They feel abandoned, not taken seriously, not listened to. And that's also a problem we have to address.
All right. We'll have more in just a minute. First, a reminder that you're listening to Issues in the News, coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your moderator, Fred Barnes, of the Weekly Standard. Joining me today are Christoph Voigt of AFP and Barbara Slavin of Al Monitor. This is a reminder that you can listen to Issues online as a podcast. The program is also available for free download on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/issuesinthenews. What, Barbara, do you think the U.S. should have learned from the attacks in France? I think Christophe was suggesting something which I think is true, that we should expect similar attacks or some kind of attacks here. Well, they may be thwarted or not, but they're probably being planned somewhere.
Yeah, well, there was just the other day a gentleman in Ohio who was arrested and charged with plotting to kill government officials inside the U.S. Capitol. Apparently, he had spoken of his desire to support the Islamic State. So, I mean, every other day there's somebody who gets picked up. You know, in this case, it was a convert to Islam. We've had the Fort Hood shootings. We've had a number of attempts, as I've mentioned. But in terms of Americans coming back from Syria, the estimate is there've only been about 150 Americans who've gone to fight in Syria. It's a little more complicated to get there from here. For Europeans, this is another factor. It's very easy to go to Turkey, and from Turkey, it's very easy to go to Syria or Iraq. And, I mean, that raises another question, which is the attitude of the Turkish government toward the whole conflict in Syria. And I think it's fair to say that they're very ambivalent. The question is, you know, which do they hate more, the jihadis or Bashar al-Assad? And I would venture that they hate Bashar al-Assad more, at least the government of President Erdogan does. So this, again, is a conversation that European leaders are going to need to have with the Turks about better means of catching these people, preventing them from going to Syria, preventing them from coming back.
Christophe, let me ask you about an issue that is still being discussed in the United States, and that is the lack of a high-level official, American official, at the march, in the Solidarity March in Paris. Is that an overblown issue? I mean, the White House has said, well, it was a mistake, but they didn't send somebody who is better known than the ambassador to France. And I'll have to say, maybe I should have known this, but if you'd asked me who was the ambassador to France, I wouldn't have known. I've known some in the past, but this one I didn't. Was this something that irritated the French and Europeans? It obviously has been an issue here.
I actually think not at all. It was an issue here, and I can understand why. Well, there were political reasons, and then there were real reasons for people feeling that America should have been represented at a much higher level than what was the case. In France, it wasn't a debate. I think what the French really appreciated was when John Kerry took the microphone and spoke in French. That was, I think, the same day of the attacks against Charlie Hebdo, or just the next day. I remember getting the copy from our reporters. They were really excited because John Kerry, we know he speaks French, and he speaks French well.
I know that, yes.
He never speaks French in public when there are reporters around because, you know, it's not something you do in America. So he did that, and I think that touched us deeply. Even from afar, like for me, for my colleagues, I think that was a real gesture. And there was no real debate in France about, you know, yes, there was the hope that Obama was going to come. Of course. I mean, everybody wants to have Obama, you know, in times like that. But I really, there wasn't much of a debate. It was all here.
Hey, let me risk raising the issue of immigration, Barbara, but this aspect of it. It's a front page story on the Washington Post about the debate going on about whether Jews in France should or should not migrate to Israel. An increased number of them are. What about that?
I think this has a lot to do with what you think of Bibi Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister who did go, even though apparently the French didn't want him to go.
Kind of horned his way in.
Horned his way in and pushed his way to the front of the line so that he would be in the picture, you know, with Hollande and Angela Merkel and so on. The French then retaliated by inviting Mahmoud Abbas, the head of the Palestinian Authority, so that he was in the front row as well. And I think the president of Mali also was in the picture. It was kind of an interesting picture. Netanyahu and even more some of the other Israeli officials really kind of stirred the pot when they basically told the French Jewish population, I think they're, what, half a million maybe, French Jews, that, look, you're not safe in this country, come to Israel.
They called it your real home.
Your real home. Yes. And it was seen as exploiting a tragedy to try to increase European Jewish immigration to Israel. And some people, including a lot of French Jews, frankly, found it unseemly. The way that that Netanyahu behaved and others behaved. That said, a lot of French Jews are moving to Israel because they do not feel safe in France.
I think last year it was 7,000.
7,000,
which is a significant number.
Very large number. And, you know, there have been a number of incidents, not just the murder of these four people inside a kosher supermarket, but there have been incidents at schools. Synagogues have been bombed. French Jews that are religious say they feel uncomfortable wearing skull caps on the street. France has a very large Muslim population, which many Muslims, but also many ordinary French, sympathize with the Palestinian cause and not with the Israeli behavior in Gaza and in the West Bank. So, you know, there's a lot of tension. And I think obviously it's a question for individual French Jews to make. I mean, on the other side, there were a lot of complaints that what Netanyahu should have said is, you know, don't run away. Don't give in to terrorism. Here's somebody who's always trying to say, don't give in to terrorism. And now he's encouraging people to do just that. So, you know, I would imagine we will see more French Jews go to Israel. But I think a lot will stay because they have been there for centuries. And many of them obviously consider themselves more French than Jewish, or certainly more French than Israeli.
And I think that Manuel Valls gave the right answer. Mm-hmm. He was clearly annoyed, not
the
to say
Prime
more,
Minister,
by
yeah.
what Netanyahu said, mm-hmm. saying, you know, this is your real home. He said, like, France wouldn't be the same, or wouldn't be France without French Jews. Mm-hmm. And he's absolutely right. I think it was the right answer to give, not to give in Netanyahu's provocation, but just, saying, yes, they're part of it. And you're right, it's a spillover after Israeli-Palestinian conflict that plays out in French suburbs. You have a suburb that is called Sarcelles, where you have a mix of Jews of North African origin who had to come back after we lost our colonial wars, and whereas there is also a big majority of Muslim population, and that's where the tensions are really, really strong, and sometimes violence, or often violence.
You know, to go back to an America, higher-ranking American official in the march, I didn't quite understand why we didn't have somebody there. It could have been the Secretary of State. Didn't have to be President Obama, but it could have been some higher official. Do you understand what happened, Barbara?
Kerry was in India and on a long planned trip. So I think to try to haul him back to Paris just for the march didn't make sense. The real question I have is why they didn't send Joe Biden, and I don't know if he had personal reasons for not being able to travel at that time. I wouldn't have expected Obama necessarily to go.
The president could tell him to go, for instance.
Yeah, well, there may have been some personal thing, you know, some family issue. We don't we don't know the backstory. Maybe it will finally come out. Or it simply could have been just an oversight by a White House that is not always, how should we put it, at the top of its game. They could have sent Susan Rice, the National Security Advisor. The other thing, of course, is that the Attorney General, Eric Holder, was in Paris for consultations, so I don't understand why. And he made time to do American television interviews. He should have, I think, he would have been appropriate to march. Let me say, though, that I marched at a much smaller demonstration in Washington on the Sunday, and there were about 2,000 people. Most of them were French Americans, but there were a lot of Americans, including the very prominent person at VOA, David Ensor, and he and I marched along together. And there were others. I met French-Iranian friends who were there. A guy from the Danish embassy was there. So we had a quite respectable little march ourselves.
I think it was easy to, and I'm not trying to find any excuses for the White House, but it was easy not to realize how big it was going to be.
Maybe.
It was amazing. I mean, it never happened before. 1.5 million people in Paris on very short notice. 3.7 million in the whole of France. It's unprecedented. And I think, it was easy not to realize that it was going to be that big. But
Well, the question, of course, is, which we started the show on, is whether it really changed anything. I guess we'll see. That's all the time we have. Joining us on the show today were Barbara Slavin, Senior Fellow at the Atlantic Council and Washington Correspondent for Al Monitor, and Christophe Vogt, French Editor-in-Chief for North America at Agence France-Presse. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Thanks for listening.
From Washington, the nation's capital, the Voice of America has brought you Issues in the News. You can email your questions or comments to our panelists. Send them to voanews@voanews.com. And to keep up with all the latest news, tune in the Voice of America on radio, television, or the World Wide Web. Join us next week at this time for Issues in the News.